We're going to be talking statistics now. We're going to find out about bioresearch in Cambridge. We all know, of course, that the biomedical research cluster around Cambridge is very important, very vital to the city. It's one of our powerhouses. It has been for many years. It's because of the academic know-how and feed-through and, well, feedback that we get from the academics here in the University of Cambridge. We have many sites like Granter Park. We have the Sanger Centre, of course, at Hingston, at the Cambridge Research Park, and, of course, the very first science park, the Cambridge Science Park, set up by the university in the 1970s. Cambridge Bioresearch, though, is somewhat newer than that, and we've got some of the team with us this morning. Kelly Beer is the research nurse lead, or lead research nurse, I suppose, whichever way you want to put it,
Doesn't matter.
On the website. Good morning to you.
Hello.
Barbara's here as well. Hello.
Good morning.
One of a team of several research nurses. And Mr. Statto himself, we call him Neil Walker. He's the Clinical Bioinformatics and Statistical Genomics Manager, which is quite a mouthful, I suppose, Neil.
Yes.
But I understand it's statistics. Now, you're based on the Cambridge Biomedical Research Campus. That means Addenbrookes Hospital. You're in the, I think, the Wellcome Trust building there, is that right?
We've moved around a little bit. We now have a reasonably permanent clinical research unit based still on the Addenbrookes site. So we're lucky enough to have a bespoke clinical research unit with a couple of treatment rooms where air-conditioned, I should say, in this heat, where we can do clinical interventions, recruit people, collect samples for research. And, of course, office space, because we have expanded over 11 or so years we've been active for, and now we're quite a big team that support the bioresource of probably up to about 60 staff across the project, which is fantastic.
60 staff, something like, as we said earlier on, various volunteers that take part, 17,000 of those. How many people come through your door every day? Or is it sort of a day by day, hour by hour?
It's a great question. It really varies depending on what studies we're supporting at the time. We have a lot of volunteers who take part in research without coming through the door. So we work as something called a research tissue bank. That means that researchers can apply to access samples that are stored and data. So as well as the volunteers that come through the door and see us, we also have volunteers daily taking part in research without them needing to physically visit us, which is great and a great use of our resources. But day to day, probably anywhere from a couple to half a dozen up to 10 or more, depending on what we're up to.
Clinicians, so, yeah, you've got the team of two of you are here today as research nurses. How big is the research nurse team?
So the research nurse team, there's five of us at the moment, including Kelly, who's obviously our lead nurse. We're getting two lovely new nurses coming soon, which will be very handy. And we all work on studies together, but we also independently run them alongside our research team as well.
Research nurses, do you start life as a normal, I say normal, a very special nurse?
Yes.
You know, you are a practitioner in nursing, and then you move over to the research sector.
Yeah, that's it. We're all registered nurses, all from various different walks of life, lots of different various experience, and then we've all kind of migrated towards research in the last 5 years. Mm. Most of the team have been there now.
So you've literally been prowling along the wards over the years, looking after
Absolutely.
Patients in the marvellous ways that you do, and
Absolutely.
Then gone into the research.
Yeah, so clinical research tends to be something that can bite you a bit like a bug, and once you're infected, you tend to stay in there. It's an amazing specialty to be part of, because what we get to experience is a different side of nursing care. So we're looking after volunteers who are coming in to take part in research. Often altruistically, we're not paying these people, and we have time to spend with them, which is amazing. So we really get to see a different part of nursing and a different side of nursing. Also, there's academic interest for us all, so it's a great specialty to be in. So for all nurses, I encourage you to look into it.
There you go. There'll be some nurses listening today. Some of the residences around the Addenbrookes site, I'm sure. I mean, we don't want to steal nurses, of course, from the mainstream. But it's quite difficult to say that, isn't it, to join the research sector. Do you go out to your subjects, shall we call them, the control patients that you have? I call them control because there's the anonymity. We'll talk about that in a minute. Do you actually go out to people's homes?
Yeah, so depending on the particular research study, some of them have to come in to see us at Addenbrookes. Depending on the study, we might then be able to go and see them at home or their workplace if that's easier, so they can take part in the study. We can take samples there, make it a bit more accessible for volunteers to take part in research. Not everyone's able to get to Addenbrookes or wants to go there, so it makes it a bit easier for us.
So if there's a medical room at somewhere like, I don't know, Marshall's Engineering down at Newmarket Road, you could go and see a group of people all at the same time?
Generally, we see people on a one-on-one basis. People take part in research, try to maintain their anonymity. So we'll see them on a one-to-one basis, go to their home address sometimes, they might be able to take part there. If we're taking blood samples for research, generally people can do that from their own homes if that's easier. They might be able to take part there or in an office if that's convenient for them there as well.
Recruitment. Now, I'm sure you're always looking for more volunteers, or do you have enough? Presumably,
never.
The more the merrier. I mean, the
more everyone's welcome.
The database you can get, you've got 17,000. So how do you recruit?
So we recruit a number of ways. We are recruiting all the time, every day, and people can contact us via the website, Twitter, email, Facebook, however they like to say we're interested in research, how can we get involved. We have very few exclusion criteria and everyone is helpful, so we'd encourage anyone interested in research to look us up. We do various recruitment drives, so we might be at Freshers' Fairs, you might see us there, you might see us at the Big Weekend, you might see us at Adam Brooks and the Concourse, in outpatients, giving people information about research. And you might come across us in patient settings as well. So we do actively recruit patient cohorts to the BioResource. And we're often in outpatient clinics asking people for specific conditions if they want to join up as well. So anywhere and everywhere, and we'd love everyone to join.
Listeners, you can be a member of the panel. Yes.
And one thing that's changing is, of course, we're going through social media as well. So one of the big new BioResource activities is looking at mental health, and particularly people with anxiety and depression. And that will be targeted through Twitter and Facebook. So that's a way of also people being involved, again, without having to come to a particular clinic or particular hospital.
That's Neil Walker. Neil, while you're there, then, we'll ask you about the anonymity, because some people might say, well, OK, I'm sort of pouring out my very heart and soul. You know everything about me, not just my measurements, but much, much more. And it's very important in data integrity that anonymity is protected. I'm sure that's one of your responsibilities.
Yes, we make it very clear that we separate out the research nurses who see the personal details in order to be able to contact people. I mean, plainly it needs to stay joined up. But on the research side, there is just an anonymous link that joins the researchers with an ID to that data so that the researchers don't see any of that detail. It's not completely anonymous, though, because everyone is unique. We have enough data on everyone to make them plainly identifiable to themselves, perhaps, if no one else. So it's more like a pixelated picture of yourself. You can imagine it's not an aggregate table, it's not a graph, it's nothing like that. It's a pixelated picture, so you would know it was you, and maybe your neighbour would know it was you if they saw that picture. But it's anonymised down to the extent that it could be unanonymised again by the research nurses to go back to you to talk to you some more about the reasons to join research.
And I come as a volunteer, and I'd be known as Phil. But at the other end, I'd be known just as a case study number.
Exactly. And the case study number the researchers know is not even the one that you would know. So there is a separation between the identifiers that are used to discuss you. So you have a number on the top of your letter saying, please come to this thing, and here is your volunteer ID. But that's not the one the researchers see either. And the reason that was introduced is that quite a lot of the staff actually belong to the BioResource themselves, and they need to not know that they're working on their own stuff.
Now, who decides the research project? How many studies do you have of different types going at any one time?
Say how many we've done. So we've recently added it up. There are 121 recall studies we have done in the last 10 years. So that's 300,000 emails, 136,000 letters.
Of invitation.
So it's a big activity. Mm-hmm. At any one time, the committee that decides these things will maybe approve 8 new ones, so there may be 16 running at some stage through their process. Mm-hmm. So it's quite a complicated part, and what we hope to do is to balance the activities. So some of it is nurses, some of it may be an online survey, some of it may be requesting samples or data, so that different people are stressed by all this activity.
And some, of course, come along to see you, and of course, I suppose some people are a bit they decided they're going to do this. You've decided they're suitable, presumably through either genetic characteristics that all being worked out, that this certain pool of people will be the right people for this particular study.
That's it.
So if I was to walk in, I mean, how many hours would I be with you? And I suppose there's nothing typical, but give me an idea of what I would expect if I arrived, say, at 9 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, so as you rightly say, every study is a little bit different, but we support a lot of research is perhaps looking at linking genes with particular disease or particular genetic changes or changes in the immune system, for example. And a typical visit for a study like that would look about 15 or 20 minutes that you'd be with us. We give you a lot of information up front when we invite you about what we're going to ask you to do. So how long it will take, where we'd like you to come. We'll give you a stamp for your parking. You get out for free. That's the best thing about it. And when you come to the research unit, as I say, it's a bespoke research unit, so you're not in the main part of the hospital. We're lucky to have a wonderful support team, reception team there, who will greet you, welcome you. We have tea and coffee, good biscuits. and then we have a consent process we walk you through. So that's where we like to spend a lot of time, making sure that you know exactly what you're there for, what the study is trying to do, and then often a blood sample collection, which is just a straightforward sort of collection. So in and out fairly swiftly, or we'll be at home maybe for 15 or 20 minutes. You've done an amazing thing, taken part in research, and we're very grateful for everyone for their time. But it's usually quite quick and easy and but fun.
Some people have stayed with you for longer. They've perhaps spent a day with you. I don't know whether they've had computer tomography or CT scan.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or go through the MRI, the washing machine, as it's sometimes called.
Yeah.
You book time on that, don't you, through the NHS resources?
We do. Yeah, we collaborate with a lot of groups on campus, and we're lucky to be so well resourced down there. So we collaborate a lot with the NIHR's clinical research facility down there, and we support studies that might need overnight stays or that might have various different elements, as you say, like MRI and fasting studies, blood samples. So really it can be a diverse range of things. And often with those types of studies, people might get a little bit of feedback. They might get a picture of their brain. They might get to know a bit about their metabolism, which is really interesting as well.
I've seen one of the MRI scans of someone's brain, and it looks like the person has ended up being made out of wood. I don't know. It's sort of a rather, it's extraordinary. It looked like a wood carving rather than someone's head with a cross-sectional. It's quite extraordinary. So the question I did ask, and we haven't really got around to answering yet, is who's driving the projects? Who's coming up with the topics to lead the study? Is it the world of pharmacopoeia? I mean, drug companies come to you and say, oh, could you do this particular study? Or is it from academics within the university?
It appears to be mostly academics.
The studies we support, local academics. It will vary, and there are various research themes that will be supported through the biomedical research centres, the BRCs, which some people may have heard of. So there will be research themes that are supported. Broadly speaking, in BioResource, because we have this panel that's characterised and we have genetic information and other details to recall people by, we tend to see researchers that are interested in understanding better links between genes and disease. So by the nature of our panel, it attracts certain types of researchers, but we support a lot of academics. We support commercial companies as well. We give volunteers a lot of choice in what they take part in when they do register with us. But it is very diverse, but generally academics who have ideas, who couldn't do research without this type of panel, are the ones who come and see us. Lots of autoimmune disease research we support, so inflammatory bowel disease, type 1 diabetes, lupus, vasculitis,
MS,
multiple sclerosis, those.
So you're looking for patients, well, I call them patients, I suppose, well, of course they are.
Volunteers.
But they're volunteers to you, maybe they are patients to the general practitioner.
Mm.
And I guess GPs can refer people to your studies?
Not as such. So we have worked with GP surgeries in the past to do cohort recruitment, which has been very successful. And the more GPs know about what we do, the better. Obviously, that's great if they do link in, and if they have patients interested in research, it's great for them to come to us. But at the moment, we don't have a sort of set referral. It's very a self-referral. Anyone is welcome to join at any time.
The data you get, are you based on a commercial model? Do you sell the data to drug companies? How does that work?
In short, so we're more altruistic than that, and also less altruistic in the sense that there is an approval process whereby researchers can apply to receive data. The data is this pixelated version we've talked about, so it removes all the personal details about your addresses, but each researcher has to apply in person and produce a proposal of why they want the data. They need to promise to keep the data secure and sign a fearsome set of terms and conditions, and then they can access the data if it's approved by an independent board. So it's a process which is managed access rather than open access, and certainly not commercially sold.
As some of the funding you get comes from the NHS, the National Institute of Health Research is very important to you as well.
Incredibly so. So, as you say, we are government funded. So, essentially, it comes from NHS England, the money that supports what we do and that pays for our staff. So, I think that's something really nice. And with NHS 70 this year as well, it's also nice if people want to give something back to the NHS, taking part in research is a great way to do that.
There are other centres across the UK, not just Cambridge.
Yes. Yes, there's a whole network. So, Newcastle, Leeds, Manchester, Exeter, quite a few in London. Yes, so there is a group now setting up. So the IT staff I manage, which is a group of 12 currently, supports research across those different groups and trying to consolidate how we recall people from, say, a very rare thing you're looking for, a rare variant in a gene. You may have to go across the whole country to find people. So the panel there, instead of being 17,000, is currently 100,000 people, and the goal is to grow it to 200,000 people and maybe 300,000 people. But that then becomes quite a problem. And a good problem.
I think you're going to need more and more racks of server banks to cope with all the data that you're going to amass. I mean, it's wonderful. I mean, more of it. I mean, we can strive forward. We can investigate for causes of disease. And maybe down the line, say 20 years from now, there could be a good drug that could come up with a solution as a result of the work that you do. So you're very much, if you like, in at the bottom end, scooping through.
Yeah.
If you're interested as a listener in joining the Cambridge Bioresource, then there is a website you can find out more about. It's cambridgebioresource.group.cam.ac.uk. So it's hosted by the university. I'll give you that again, all one word, for cambridgebioresource.group.cam.ac.uk. There's also social media, so you can go on Facebook and find out more there. And have a look at the not only the homepage, find out what volunteers and patients would find if they go along. The other thing is that you do feedback some of the information because you have some seminars. You have evenings where academics come along to talk at some of the lecture theatres in the university and share some of the work that's been amassed.
Absolutely. So we had one just last week, and they're usually very well attended. We often have over 100 people there, and it's a great opportunity for our researchers to talk about what impact it's made for volunteers to take part in their research. Sometimes the research studies can be a little bit detached from perhaps a cure or a new drug for a particular disease. So it's great for our volunteers to have that feedback of just what a difference it's made for them to donate a single, sometimes blood sample in learning more about a particular disease. So we really try hard to give feedback about studies to volunteers as best we can.
Gives those volunteers an opportunity to ask questions as well. So they get to talk to us and ask questions and talk to the researchers and ask questions about what's going on and where the future's going.
If I was to move away, final question, if I was to move away from the area, you tell me that there are various other centres doing this work, bioresource centres around the country. Can I just transfer? Is it possible to do that?
Yes. In short.
From Cambridge to Newcastle or wherever it was.
Yes, absolutely.
This is really good.
We would carry on attempting to contact you anyway. So some studies, for instance, are being run from Oxford, and people from all over the country have been invited, and some people accepted travelling to Oxford to do a particular study. So maybe it's the weekend out in Oxford was the appeal, but it's possible that people are invited from all around the country now.
And did they get expenses for the travel?
They will do. Expenses for travel and for that kind of thing, I would expect probably expenses for overnight stay as well. So we make sure people aren't out of pocket in terms of travel, parking, those types. We don't generally pay people for their participation in research unless that's detailed as part of the study, but certainly we'd reimburse those kind of expenses.
But the person taking part has the knowledge that they are, the pride that they are helping you and helping science.
Absolutely.
And helping for cures and solutions to problems of disease in our world and in our society.
Mm.
Everyone, thank you very much for coming in to talk to us today.
Thank you. Thanks very much, Phil.
To Kelly, who's the research nurse lead here in Cambridge at Cambridge Bioresource, and also to Barbara, who's joined us this morning, and Neil Walker as well, who's their clinical bioinformatics and statistical genomics manager. I said it all right 3 or 4 times and stumble at the last. That's typical me. Thank you all for joining us.
Thanks.
Fascinating. Thank you very much.